Part 1. Chapter 16. Gateway. Plato and Tolstoy both assume that it can be firmly established that certain works have certain effects. Plato is sure that the representation of cowardly people makes us cowardly. The only way to prevent this effect is to suppress such representations. Tolstoy is confident that the artist who sincerely expresses feelings of pride will pass those feelings on to us. We can no more escape than we could escape an infectious disease. In fact, however, the effects of art are neither so certain nor so direct. People vary a great deal both in the intensity of their response to art and in the form which that response takes. Some people may indulge fantasies of violence by watching a film, instead of working out those fantasies in real life. Others may be disgusted by even glamorous representations of violence. Still others may be left unmoved, neither attracted nor disgusted. Although Plato and Tolstoy claim that works of art have an unavoidable impact on people's feelings, the degrees and forms of people's actual responses differ greatly. Exercise 1. In one classic experiment, people watched a series of car accidents from a driving safety video. After watching it, the viewers estimated how fast the cars were traveling before the accident. Everyone saw exactly the same video, but the questionnaire that they completed used one of five different terms to describe how the vehicles interacted. Some of the viewers were asked to estimate how fast the cars were going when they hit each other. Others were asked to estimate how fast the cars were going when they smashed, collided, bumped, or contacted each other. Though everyone saw the same cars involved in the same accidents, their estimates differed widely. When the accidents were sensationalized, the cars seemed to be traveling faster. In the minds of viewers, a smashed car must have been traveling faster than a merely contacted or hit car. Although the participants watched the same car accidents on video, their perceptions of how fast the cars involved in the accidents were traveling varied according to how shockingly the accidents were described. Exercise 2. Anyone would be totally dismayed on hearing that many young people do not know the capital of France or think that the Second World War was 200 years ago. The shock is not the lack of this specific knowledge itself, but rather the fact that it is taken to be expressive or indicative of a more general state of deep-seated ignorance, a set of qualities such as a lack of interest in what is around one, indifference, and low self-expectation. If one imagined instead a young person expressing interest in learning that Paris is the capital of France, and going on to ask lots of questions about the city and what a capital is, then in this case, one would not feel shock or horror, but rather surprise. The point is that the knowledge in itself is less important than the state of mind that it illustrates. What primarily concerns us about young people is the state of mind underlying their ignorance, not merely their lack of knowledge. Exercise 3. In one study in 1959 by Dr. J.C. Wright, who was then in charge of cancer research at Bellevue Medical Center in New York, 15 terminal cancer patients were given instructions to spend as much time as possible out of doors during the warmer months. They were to avoid artificial light or light received by the eyes through glass, including sunglasses or reading glasses. Dr. Wright had become attracted to the idea that light energy entering the eyes might possibly be a growth-regulating factor as far as tumor development was concerned. Dr. Wright and her assistants observed that at the end of the summer, 14 of the 15 patients showed no further advancement in tumor development. Afterward, it was discovered that the one patient whose condition had gotten worse had continued to wear prescription glasses which blocked the ultraviolet portion of natural sunlight from reaching the eyes. The study, carried out by Dr. J.C. Wright on 15 terminal cancer patients, suggested that natural sunlight entering directly to the eyes may be very effective in stopping the progression of their cancers. Exercise 4. An Egyptian executive, after entertaining his Canadian guest, offered him joint partnership in a new business venture. The Canadian, delighted with the offer, suggested that they meet again the next morning with their respective lawyers to finalize the details. The Egyptian never showed up. The surprised and disappointed Canadian tried to understand what had gone wrong. Did Egyptians lack punctuality? Was the Egyptian expecting a counteroffer? Were lawyers unavailable in Cairo? None of these explanations proved to be correct. Rather, the problem was caused by the different meaning Canadians and Egyptians attached to inviting lawyers. The Canadian regarded the lawyer's presence as facilitating the successful completion of the negotiation. The Egyptian interpreted it as signaling the Canadian's mistrust of his verbal commitment. Canadians often use the impersonal formality of a lawyer's services to finalize agreements. Egyptians, by contrast, more frequently depend on the personal relationship between bargaining partners to accomplish the same purpose. The Egyptian executive and his Canadian counterpart failed to establish a joint venture because, unlike the latter, the former considered the presence of a lawyer as threatening the potential partnership of mutual trust. Exercise 5. Man differs from the lower animals because he preserves his past experiences. What happened in the past is lived again in memory. About what goes on today hangs a cloud of thoughts concerning similar things undergone in bygone days. With the animals, an experience perishes as it happens, and each new doing or suffering stands alone. But man lives in a world where each occurrence is charged with echoes and reminiscences of what has gone before, where each event is a reminder of other things. Hence, he lives not, like the beasts of the field, in a world of merely physical things, but in a world of signs and symbols. A flame is not merely something which warms or burns, but is a symbol of the enduring life of the household, of the abiding source of cheer, nourishment, and shelter to which man returns from his casual wanderings. Unlike the lower animals, man is able to relate the present with the past in terms of the mental process that codes and decodes what he has experienced. Exercise 6. Human beings have a deep capacity for isolationism, for splitting into groups that diverge from each other. In New Guinea, for instance, there are more than 800 languages, some spoken in areas just a few miles across, yet as not understandable to those on either side as French and English. There are still 7,000 languages spoken on Earth, and the people who speak each one are remarkably resistant to borrowing words, traditions, rituals, or tastes from their neighbors. Whereas vertical transmission of cultural traits goes largely unnoticed, horizontal transmission is far more likely to be regarded with suspicion or even fierce anger, say the evolutionary biologists Mark Pagel and Ruth Mace. Cultures, it seems, like to shoot messengers. People do their best to cut themselves off from the free flow of ideas, technologies, and habits, limiting the impact of cultural exchange. As is shown by the presence of a wide variety of languages on Earth, human beings tend to have an unfriendly attitude towards cultural exchange or transmission, seeking to create separation from others.